And good evening, good afternoon, good morning, wherever and whenever you happen to be listening to us here on the Great Wide Web that makes up this big wide world here on the internet. We are the last three guys to do a podcast, our 13th episode. I'm John Morgan along with
Daniel Bolton
and
Leon Brown.
Well, I don't know if you noticed it, but yes, it in the Atlanta, something is different. It is 35 degrees and brutally cold, but for some strange reason today, the birds are singing, the sun, while not shining, you can feel that energy, that hum in the air, something that has just not been there the last, 25 years, and could it possibly have something to do with the fact that Atlanta is now the home of a champion? I don't know if you guys happened to catch the Atlanta United MLS Cup game last night, but Atlanta United defeated the Portland Timbers, shut them out by a score of 2-0, and had all of them saying "Shiver me timber," and that's kind of like what we're saying right now with this with this cold weather out there. So Atlanta is now a champion, and joining us is one of our good friends, and he was there. Ground zero for this entire happening yesterday, Sam Crenshaw, who I called him the hardest working man in Atlanta sports, TV, radio, he does it all. Sam, hello, and we were talking before we got on the air, and now you're parade organizer, apparently.
You're right. One of the hats I wear is a producer and a reporter for ATL 26, and that's the city of Atlanta, and we're in the midst of planning a live stream Monday morning from 10 until noon of the celebration through downtown Atlanta. So we're just lining up people to talk to do interviews with. It's all going to proceed. The parade route is going to start at the intersection of Peachtree and Baker, go down past the aquarium to Marietta Street, going to hang a left there and go up to Andrew Young International and go up past the Georgia World Congress Center between that and State Farm Arena, end up at the Home Depot backyard, and that's where they want to have the big celebration with the dignitaries, where Arthur Blank and Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms and so many others will acknowledge the team, and finally the team itself will come up and greet the fans. We expect the weather's supposed to be bad, but you know what? How often do we get a chance to do this in Atlanta?
Well,
talked about how long ago it's been.
Yeah, 23 years, a long
years.
Time.
Mm-hmm. A very long time, to the point, we've taken a different parade route. I do believe the last time we had the Braves, their parade route went straight north on Peachtree and ended up in Piedmont Park. Remember, that's 95, Centennial Olympic Park was not here yet. In other cities who've done this on a frequent basis, you already know what the drill is going to be. Boston, something wins something every year. So you know which way the route's going to go. You know where it's going to end up. Same in Chicago or same in New York. This is something we don't get to do often. And the last time we did it, a whole park and a whole part of town exists that didn't even exist back then. So, it'll be interesting to do it. Hopefully, it'll be the first of many to come. That's what we're hoping.
Absolutely, man. This is Daniel, Sam. Tell me what the atmosphere was like after Joseph Martinez scored that first goal. Like, how did it feel in there? Did the atmosphere just kind of capture you a little bit?
It did, and it's like the crowd was waiting for it. There was this great deal of anticipation, and there were some tries that, just missed the connections. There had some passes that just went past wide, and they weren't able to get the goals. But, starting it out, a little bit of butterflies, and you talk with the players afterwards, they say that. But then, as things went along there in that first half, you saw Atlanta United get some great opportunities. There was a very close Almiron with the bicycle kick. If he makes that goal, Arthur Blank's going to have to go out and put a new roof on the stadium, because he would have blown right off if we scored it that way. And the crowd was so ready for it. The crowd was so ready, 73,000 plus. And so when Joseph Martinez scores that goal, as he's done so many times during this season, get that first period goal that gets the team off to that great start and gets the opponent on their heels, that's what it did big time. And then in front of that big crowd, it was just incredible. What an electric atmosphere in Atlanta last night.
Yes, it was, certainly. What do you expect for, like, I guess the... This wasn't the Braves. This wasn't the Falcons. This wasn't the Hawks, right? But
right.
What do you expect out of the city of Georgia? Like, what do you expect for as far as a turnout for this parade that we're going to have for our championship team?
I think people may be pleasantly surprised about the turnout for this parade because, like you said, it's a championship, and we've been waiting for one. Sure, people may say, well, I wish it would have been the Falcons, or I wish it would have been the Braves, or I wish it would have been the Hawks. This is the championship we're getting. I just had a birthday in October. I turned 60. I ain't picky no more. This is a championship, and I'm thrilled about it. I think, though, it's brought a lot of people along because a lot of people who may not have followed soccer, a lot of people who didn't grow up playing soccer, they probably don't get it. But it's one of those things, if you ever go to it and experience it, it just draws you in. Mm-hmm. The experience of it all and the fact that you see our city and our area in its very best light. You see people from all walks and all cross sections that come out, and it truly is Atlanta United. And I think people who see that, maybe they tuned in last night and they watched it for the first time. It draws them in, and next year they're going to make their way to Mercedes-Benz Stadium to witness this team playing. So I think the reception is going to be great. I think a lot of people are going to see the soccer for the first time. But when you win, guess what? A lot of folks jump on. And I think the people who've been the diehard people who've been supporting this team all along will be welcoming to those folks. They won't say, oh, no, you weren't here from the start, so don't come being on the bandwagon now. There's plenty of room on this bandwagon.
Oh,
and I think that the plan is that they want to market this team to be statewide for the entire state of Georgia, not just Atlanta. We got pockets in certain parts of the state where the high schools don't play soccer. In some small counties around, and you can't imagine in this day and time not having a high school soccer team, but it's true. So there's still a lot of to be done, and this team and this happening is going to plant some seeds for growth even in those areas of this state. So I think the reception is going to be tremendous tomorrow, even in spite of inclement weather. This team has given us something to be truly proud of, and hopefully it breaks that imaginary jinx, the thing that the national media just pounds on us about. You're Atlanta, so you can't win. You're Atlanta, so the wheels have to fall off because you're Atlanta. And it gets us to the point where we believe it. You know, we drink the Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
So I'm like, hopefully they get to the point that we believe that it can happen. It can happen for this team. Some people get healthy, some changes with the offensive line. Maybe the Falcons can do it next. And the Braves surely seem to be on their way to doing it sometime in the next 2 to 3 years. So I think this is just the beginning, and we get this parade route down. Now we know which way to go next time.
You know what's funny? Before I turn it over to John, funny story. I was actually in Biloxi last night when the game was playing, celebrating my wife's birthday, and we just got back today. And when Martinez scored that first goal, a mistake clearly by Portland, but when he scored that first goal, I did the fist pump. And I hurt myself. And I said, you know what? I know this is going to happen. Because I felt that mystique, Sam. You know, guys, I felt that mystique, man.
Right, right.
The last time I, which was the 95 World Series, I was 11 years old.
Yeah.
I was 11, so I was a child, and I was at that Braves parade. And ever since then, I've been waiting for that other moment. Now, I'll be at Georgia State tomorrow. I'll be at work. Hopefully, they close it down for us. You know, we'll see.
Yeah, I was working for that 95 championship. I was working at a restaurant, and I came home. My mom looked at me, and I said, yeah, Mom, I'm going to go out and fire and pillage and overturn some cars. I'll be right back.
Yeah.
That's what I said. And of course, she looked at me like, what the heck are you talking about? But, Sam, 73,000 people went to that ball game, and they were into it. I mean, they were waving the towels. They had everything going on. Largest crowd in MLS history. It's kind of amazing just how much that Atlanta has become a soccer mecca in such a short time. And I'd like,
I'd
like to think that this is kind of a master plan by Arthur Blank, who kind of encompassed everything, thought of everything, and brought it all in and put it all together. We wouldn't be here without him, without this.
Well, you know, he's a businessman now, and the bottom line of any successful businessman is to know your customers. Because when you look up customer service in any type of dictionary, we ought to see his face there.
Right.
That's been the theme of what he's done for business, and it's what he's done with the sports franchises that he owns. He's put forth his best effort to put a winning product that people will come out and support. And understand that this city, the city is worthy of having a championship team. And, you know, like you said, without him, this doesn't happen. But he has to know the climate. And we have to go back to something that happened the year after the last celebration. Of course, I'm talking about the Olympics.
Right.
That brought the world to Atlanta and made Atlanta not just a great American city, but an international city. A lot of those folks came in from around the world, and they didn't go home. They picked up the phone, go home, hey, pack my stuff and send it. I'm not coming back. You know, and that happened after the Olympics. They came here and saw this area, saw the way we get to live, our quality of life, the affordability and the amenities, an airport that can get you back home to wherever home is, you know, and so that's part of it.
And they're all on the downtown connector every night from 4 to 7.
And they all are, until we get water reworked, and that's something that's in the making as well, to get people moved around and get some alternative transportation. That's the one thing that kind of holds this area back. But talk about that international infusion in 1996. And I wish that I could talk right now with Andrew Young or with Billy Payne or those who brought the Olympics to the area, because what happened right now with this soccer team is also a part of their legacy, too.
Yes.
You know, almost right. 25 years later, to me, really is a lasting legacy of 1996.
Leon has a question for you.
Hey, Sam, it's Leon.
Sam?
Hey, Sam.
Yep.
Yeah. I was downtown around the time of the soccer game, and you would think that after the Atlanta United won the game, you would think you were in Detroit after Joe Louis won a fight. I mean, it was ridiculous. I mean, I was thinking, like, at first when I went down there, I was like, is this like, did Georgia somehow get into the playoffs and I didn't know about? I mean, you seen so much red and gold, it was crazy. And, you know, and the turnout, you would think that this right here was like a 20-year franchise, the way the turnout went. This is just a second-year franchise. So the amount of support, and me being from, you know, I'm from San Diego, California, so, you know, unfortunately, you know, I don't know the feeling of a championship being brought to the city. So I was a bit, the feeling was a bit foreign to me. But like I said, I'm saying kudos to Atlanta for this, you know.
Yeah, he was asking, Sam, I don't know if you heard the question, but he was just asking, he was downtown and the atmosphere was just something that he couldn't believe. Just something, just the way this, like I said, he compared it to Detroit after a Joe Louis fight. And he was just really amazed that that atmosphere has come to his city. He said he was from San Diego, and this is not, this is a foreign concept to him. Coming from San Diego.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of people feel like Atlanta's pretty laid back, and we get knocked on us because they said we're not a good sports town. We're not a good sports town, I guess, because, you know, we've had teams that have been the greatest down through the years. And if the product isn't winning, and, you know, people sometimes won't show up. Part of that is because it's college football's influence. And the people here in this area, we've been really spoiled by having winning and successful and consistent college football down through the years, both Georgia and Georgia Tech, more so Georgia of late than Georgia Tech, but Georgia Tech still does have that great winning tradition, and people who follow them down through the years know that. So that's what has made it so difficult, I think, for the pro teams. The thing that makes it easier for Atlanta United is we're a city of migrants, but MLS has been around only about 20, 25 years.
Right.
So yes. People don't have the generations of loyalty that they have with the other major league teams. So, you know, if the Braves go bad, well, they're really from Chicago. Out comes the Cubs jersey.
Right.
Because you grew up in Chicago going to the games with your dad and your granddad. You know, out comes your Philadelphia Phillies because you were going with your uncle and your grandmom. You know, this league hasn't been around that long. So our crowd really is an Atlanta crowd.
Right.
And I think that's the thing you really get excited about compared to the other sports. It really can happen in those other sports because people who migrated here have those years and years and generations of investment.
Yeah, well, I once went to an NASL game, saw the New England T-Men play in old Schaefer Stadium, now Gillette Stadium, where the Patriots play. So there's that. And some NASL teams, they're on informed. I think Portland Timbers was an old NASL franchise. The Seattle Sounders were. The Vancouver Whitecaps were. And I'm just kind of dating myself. But, Sam, another thing I want to ask you about, this did have one negative consequence, and it moved the high school championships from this weekend to a Tuesday and a Wednesday. Now, that is definitely going to alter those games too.
It will, and there were some coaches and some, you know, some officials who weren't happy about it. But compared to last year when there was no plan in place, at least there was a plan in place for this.
Yeah. Right.
Last year, there was no plan. And when the snow came along, teams that weren't going to get to play in Mercedes-Benz Stadium, they weren't going to be able to reschedule them there for the next week. Everybody had to go out into the cold and play on fields that they played on all year long. And it wasn't what you wanted. You played for the opportunity to come and play in an NFL facility. I think we do our high school state championships right. We give these young people an opportunity to do something that's once in a lifetime. It really is. Yeah, you got guys who are 5-star and 4-star and being looked at whatever school, but the majority of the young people who will come and play these 8 games coming up on Tuesday and Wednesday, this is the one and only chance they'll get to dress out in a pro football locker room and go out and play on an NFL field. I mean, and that's incredible. That's something worth fighting for all season. So while it's not the usual, while it's going to be difficult for some parents to get off their jobs, to come in and support them like they would normally would, unless you're down in Colquitt County. Rush Probst declared that whole town shut down. Everybody coming up here from Colquitt.
Right.
They want to come and be a part of it. And it will still be a wonderful time, and I'm glad that they will still get to play and not have to take the games outside and back to their hometowns. They will get to come and play in this NFL facility.
But some people down there would like to take the game out and come and bring it down south, simply so that it's, because I think, and you kind of hear this rumbling kind of under the surface where they just don't like making that long drive up to Atlanta. They would rather have it somewhere either in a Macon or a Valdosta so they don't have to make that long trip.
Well, I think they don't mind it for this. I think sometimes they don't mind because they have to do it so many times in the postseason. Lions was a team this year. Last year, Colquitt was that team.
Right.
You know, they made like 6 trips north in order to play, because one trip they made up was for the game that got snowed out. Mm-hmm. So they made 6 consecutive weeks they drove north because where they finished in their region. Bainbridge, a team that's here, they finished 5-5. At one point, they were 2-4. They get into the postseason. They got to go on the road, and they come to Buford, and they beat Buford, a team, and the next week, Buford fired their coach.
Right.
So you got all kinds of stories in these state finals. You got all kinds of incredible stories in these state finals. And I think, that's something we probably would love to have it at home, but the opportunity to come and do this and really kind of do it in the face of the North Georgia teams, I think that's something they keep in mind too. This year's state championships is heavy on South and Central Georgia. It really is.
It's the revenge
of South and Central Georgia.
And I think you made a good point a little earlier about actually getting to dress, getting to play in an NFL stadium, something that will probably never happen again for these kids. Maybe 2% of everyone who comes through will still get that chance. And that's something that I think that, now that you brought it up, I think that's an incredibly good point. And it's often overlooked that it's for the kids. It's to give them this once-in-a-lifetime experience, something that they'll hold on to and treasure for the rest of their time on Earth. And I think that is something that we all need to remember, that in the end, it's about that and that experience.
It truly is. It truly is. And some of the small towns that have come, like Irwin County, and like I said, a place like Bainbridge, the coach says, we're going to get there early. I want my guys to get in there and look up at that halo and see that. And I used to look it up and see it, a scoreboard going around. He wants to get in and see that and try to, soak it in, and then realize, just like the coach in Hoosiers, the football is the same length, stadium, the field is the same length as I won back home. Let's go out here and play football the best we can. So to me, that's the stuff that I enjoy seeing and enjoy talking about.
And Sam, before we let you go, I of course want to talk a little bit about Georgia State.
Yes, we do.
Yes, you must be looking forward to finally getting to call Georgia State men's this week after so long they've been on the road. But boy, that game against Alabama on Monday or Tuesday night, where they came back from 24 down in the second half to win that ball game.
Yep.
That has got to be, I think that's more of a signature win for Ron Hunter than the victory over Georgia, simply because it was in Tuscaloosa in front of their fans.
In Tuscaloosa, in front of their fans, just the way the team wouldn't quit and wouldn't give up. I mean, at halftime, that looked like an insurmountable lead that Alabama had, and surely they would win that game, wouldn't let it get away. But Georgia State just kept going, kept pushing, kept making shots. Alabama couldn't buy a free throw attempt down the stretch. And sure enough, Malik Bentlevy was there. And if anyone had a chance to know that young man and meet him, he's just remarkable. And, you know, when I'm working the broadcast, we always call him the Swiss Army Knife.
Right.
He's like, whatever Ron Hunter needs him to do. Coach, you need me to get rebounds tonight. You need me to go for loose balls. You need me to you know, to go out and hit three-pointers. Whatever you need me to do, I'll do it. That's what his play and the way he does it seems to say. And I was glad to see him get that moment, that spotlight, making that shot. It should have been free Dreamland barbecue for everybody. That's what it should have been out there to make that shot. It would be great to see him come back home against Chattanooga this week.
And this season kind of shows what Ron Hunter is up against, because he just cannot seem to get a squad, a university to come to Atlanta. No one wants to play him here.
That's true, and he didn't do anything to help his cause.
And it's really interesting the way this team goes. I mean,
Ron has to loosen up a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Man.
Well, not only that, he goes to Liberty and loses to the Flames. Then he goes to Tuscaloosa and beats Alabama. Is it a matter of this squad is kind of playing to the level of their competition?
I don't know. I mean, I think the Liberty game was a worst case scenario. First of all, they had some size, and you know, Georgia State just got cold shooting.
Right.
And that's the thing. I'm sure they learned from that, and I'm sure that's some film in the film room that he will show and can really get some people's attention, because it really was a cold shooting night. I mean, that's the thing when they have a size advantage and they don't really have the big guy. Playing in the Sun Belt, you don't always run up against a team that will have a 6'10", 6'11", 7-foot guy. But you also know if you get to the postseason, chances are you will run into that. This team has to be on, and there's so many people, it's hard to shut down one person. Sure, DeMarcus Simons jumps off the page when other teams look at him, and if they gear things for him, you know, now we got Devin Mitchell back healthy.
That's very important for them, getting Devin back, yes.
It really is. It really is. And so you can't just go out and say, we're going to shut down this one guy, and we'll beat him. And I think that's part of the great thing about this team, and why we look forward to seeing them play and look forward to seeing what they do once they get into the conference and beyond again this time.
I know they've got one more big test coming up. That's in Manhattan, Kansas, not New York, against Kansas State this week. That's going to be his last big test before he heads into the Sun Belt.
It will be. But the, you know, it's been a season of big tests all alone. A slew of tournament teams that they've had to face. I mean, it's really a difficult schedule. A lot of teams that had success. East Tennessee coming off a 25 win season. You know, Montana. And I mean, I had a chance to be on the trip for that one, for it being 15 degrees and mountain lions outside. I asked one of the team hotel, I said, so how far away are the Bears? They said the Bears are 10 or 15 miles away. You run to the Bears. I said, but we've been having trouble with the mountain lions coming into town.
Yeah, Sam, I was heading to Miami that day, and I was thinking of you. I was thinking of you on that plane.
Sure you was, John.
Thinking of flying to Fort Lauderdale, you know, thinking of Sam heading up to Miami.
Let me text Sam, see how he's doing.
Exactly.
Right?
And Sam, speaking of the women's team, Sam, you and I called that Georgia Tech game where they lost by 7. Even though they lost, I think it was a very good litmus test because they hung with the Jackets, something that they haven't done the last two times.
Hung with a talented young Yellow Jackets team, and you know, Coach Joseph had a great recruiting class. She has two young McDonald's All Americans on that team,
right?
Which is a great thing. And they beat Georgia earlier this year. They're feeling great about where they are. But to have the Georgia State team come out and just fight them to the finish, and have the chance to, you know, give themselves a chance to really compete and run with this team was simply remarkable. And I said that to Coach Hill afterwards. I said, great fight, and I think that's something they can carry forward with them. You know, it's a setback, but still, you saw a lot of victories individually and things that can be collective for this team going forward. I like the way they play, John.
Yeah,
I really like the way this group plays. We could use a little consistency in the point guard area, and I think that's something that Georgia Tech kind of picked on early on and forced a lot of turnovers. When you miss that point guard, it's going to get the ball across court, say, okay, everybody, calm down. Yeah, you know, let's run our offense. And I think that's, I don't know if that person emerges this season or if it's someone that's built be part of the recruiting class for next season. But to me, that's the one thing I see that this team could really use at times is someone who just calms everybody down.
Yeah, because they had a lot of trouble handling Georgia Tech's full court press, especially in the first quarter, because they were, Georgia Tech was so tall, their arms were everywhere, and they forced 16 turnovers in the first quarter alone.
Yeah. You know, if you're doing that, it's hard to win something if you got that going on.
Right.
But just the idea that they settled that down some in the second half, you know, and just stuck with it. I like the way this team competes and fights, and I just look forward to seeing what they do, especially when they get into the conference. They got Kennesaw State coming up this week,
right?
And you know, I'm looking forward to that matchup and seeing how well they do against the Owls.
Yeah, that should be good. And then a trip to Jacksonville, Alabama, not Florida.
Yep. That's returned because they came our way last year.
Yep.
So it'd be great to go over there, and they have a solid program as well.
Yes, they beat Ole Miss. They beat Ole Miss a little earlier this season, so that's going to be something we're going to have to contend with. But, you know, it should still be an excellent game. And, Sam, I don't want to monopolize any more of your time. You've got a parade to plan, and I want to wish you the best of luck for that. And if you need our help, we are on board. We will definitely be freezing 20-degree weather if you need us.
Absolutely.
We'll design a float that you guys can ride on and whatnot, and everybody can, you know, can salute you. You have a wonderful time.
Well, that's perfect.
We want to do that.
That's perfect. We'll do that. All right.
Appreciate it, Sam.
All right, Sam. Thanks a little much for joining us. We'll hope to talk to you sometime before the Super Bowl.
All right. Thanks a lot for having me.
All right. No problem. All right. That was Sam Crenshaw talking to us now. We're just catching up with him. Good friend of the program. Dan, yeah. We all know him very well, and it is interesting that he was talking about, you know, how well the community has come together. And I, you know, we say bandwagon, but for 73,000 screaming people down at Mercedes-Benz, that's not all bandwagon.
Yeah,
folks.
No, it's not. Out of the 73,000, I would say about 90% of those fans are diehard, hardcore, not just Atlanta United fans, but soccer fans.
Right.
Too, because when I look at a bandwagoner is just somebody they're just cheering for them because they're from Atlanta, you know. And you would have to know to follow this team and to know where this team is going from, what they've done. Listen, I think for me, in watching them and watching their development, it's a shocking thing to me because we see this oftentimes in other sports. It takes time for a franchise to get off the ground. It took no time for Atlanta United to understand what to do. Win.
Exactly. That's
put the ball in the goal, save the ball.
Exactly. You know, it's not a hard formula.
It's not a hard formula, and that's what they did, and they actually did that last night. And just to break down a little bit, last night what I saw, both teams play different styles. Mm-hmm. Atlanta United is run and gun. We're going to outrun you, and we're going to outrun you at the stadium. Versus Portland. Portland likes to slow the game down, and they like to possess the ball. And once the mistake was made on the other end, it was and Martinez put the goal, and I knew that was over with then, and then they sealed the deal with the second goal. But the play that nobody is talking about is where our goalie made the stop.
Okay, yes.
In like the 40th minute or the 41st minute, Portland came straight down and got that save. So I thought that was something else, too. I think Guzan is his name.
Yeah, Guzan is the goalie.
His first start in a championship game ever. So that's a good thing for him.
And another thing we're going to have to worry about is now
Tata Martino is
going to be leaving the team to coach the Mexico national team.
Yep.
So the United is going to have to find a manager. And he's going to bring in, you figure he's going to bring in a new style. And we don't know who else is going to be with the team. I think Escobar?
Escobar, I've heard, is probably going to leave. I think he left, too. Yeah,
so, like I said,
I think he's leaving for Europe, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, and that's another thing. How will this team contend? Because you know all those European leagues, they're going to come down, and they're going to try to poach our players simply because the European leagues have always had that big cachet regarding it. Like, good as MLS is, it's not the Premier League.
It's not the Premier League, yeah. It's not the Barcelonas, and it's not the FC Barcelonas or anything like that. It's going to be tough for the United States to combat with what Europe has to offer in soccer, which is okay, you know, and no hard feelings. We understand that. And we've had some pretty decent soccer players come here to the MLS. Wayne Rooney is here. I think he's with DC United, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe the LA Galaxy. He's one of those
things. Right.
But he's here. We've seen Beckham a while ago before he retired. He was here. So, I mean, you know, we can get the best from Europe.
Right.
But containing them is going to kind of be hard.
You know what's real interesting about being here to say that? You know, when you look on ESPN.com, ESPN has not put any kind of respect on Atlanta United's name.
Right.
They won't. I mean, my goodness. All you see, English Premier, Spanish Premier League. You know, it's like, wow.
And the reason why they won't, Leon, and let's just keep it real here. Because soccer here in America is not one of the three major sports.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, or even four major sports.
Or even four major
sports. It's after hockey.
Yeah, and we don't even have a damn hockey team. And you say still after hockey.
It might be after boxing.
Yeah. right. That's just what it is for us.
But, you know, kudos to Atlanta United for going off and putting that wonderful stadium downtown to good use.
Yeah.
Because that is a championship stadium. And for our listeners who have not seen Mercedes-Benz Stadium in person, it is one of the eight wonders of the world. I mean, the way they put it together, I mean, it's just simply amazing.
It's an incredible circular facility. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They got that halo board so everyone can see the highlights. It's just incredible how that edifice was put together. And it's weird because the first time I saw it fully completed, I was going down, you know, in MARTA to the airport and just see this thing looming. And it looks like a CGI put in a Michael Bay movie. I mean, it's just the way it's there. It's very breathtaking.
And you could tell that Arthur Blank gave a wink and a nod to Jerry Jones, Jerry's World on that.
You're right.
You know, definitely.
Right. Yeah, if you see AT&T Stadium, that place looks like a giant football. You ever notice it?
It does.
Like a giant.
Yeah, when you see the blimp view, it does look like a giant football. Yeah, it really does.
So interesting. So, and again, I asked Sam about the high school championships being moved because it's, you know, 2 years in a row that they have been kind of taken out of their familiar comfort zone. First Saturday in December, second Saturday in December, Mercedes-Benz. But at least Sam said, you know, at least this year they had a plan. It may not be a plan everybody agreed with, but it was a plan. And yeah. I really don't think that you're not going to please everybody.
No, you're not. We're actually looking at the Cowboys.
While we're taping, the Cowboys and the Eagles are going on.
And the game is over.
Game is over. It went to overtime, and it looks like Dallas is going to get the victory.
But the way that they just got it was just unbelievable. John, look at this replay here.
All right, we're going to watch the replay where it looks
that
like
that ball came off the helmet.
Yeah, it came off somebody's helmet and bounced into
Cooper's hands. Omari Cooper.
Let's see. It's going to come over. It hit his hand. He popped it up like a tip, like a basketball, like a tip drill.
Yeah, that's going to end the Eagle season, probably.
Well, we remember 2 weeks ago when we were talking about Kirk Cousins when he went down. Alex Smith. That's right. When he went down for Washington, we pretty much said this is Dallas's division to lose now.
Yep.
And it looks like that's what's going to happen. Dallas is going to take advantage to get that divisional title. And now the Cowboys are what, 8-5?
8-5.
So they will. It looks like they're going to beat that eight and eight seemingly curse that they've been under the last couple of years. And as we said going into that, Jason Garrett, he's got to perform now in the playoffs.
In the playoffs,
he doesn't have any other excuses.
So you guys think that he just, you know, it was just like we were talking about John Harbaugh with Michigan. You know, Michigan didn't get it done against Ohio State, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at it like this. If he doesn't get it done against Florida here in Atlanta for the Peach Bowl.
Why are you here?
Right. So with Garrett, John, I can see what you're saying here. Garrett has to get it done in the postseason, man. And, you know, he didn't make it last year. He was there 2 years ago. He had a 13-3 squad 2 years ago. Of course, that was the year we went to the Super Bowl.
Right.
And this year, he's probably got the number. I think he's got the number two ranked defense in the NFL, and it's showing here. A couple of big plays got the Eagles back in it, which is why the game was so close and why the score was 29-23. So
it's shocking to say that Dallas has the ingredients to make a run.
They do.
They do. They have a very favorable schedule to improve their record. Indianapolis, Tampa, and the Giants.
Exactly.
They should be 11-5.
They should be 11-5.
That should be www.11-5.
Well, I will say this. The Giants have caught fire.
Yes, they
have.
A lot
of people haven't seen this, but they have all of a sudden caught fire. I think they've won like 5 out of their last 6.
And they hung a nice 40 burger today.
Yeah. Yeah. Over the Redskins, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Who all of a sudden look like a shell of themselves right now.
And like I said, right after they lost Alex Smith, boom, they just fell flat to earth. That's something that we kind of thought would happen too.
But one thing we didn't think was going to happen is what's going on with the Carolina Panthers.
Carolina Panthers have also fallen.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a team, like Daniel stated last week, has started 6-2. They were on track for greatness and have hit that proverbial roller coaster hill.
They've lost 5 in a row, just like our Atlanta Falcons have. They have struggled. They lost to Cleveland today.
Man.
And listen, Cleveland is not. I think one of us sat here and said that they could get 6-7 wins this year, you know?
And it looks like that's where they're headed.
That's where they're headed to. Cleveland's not a bad football team, guys. I mean, they just had a rough schedule and just needed to learn how to win. Seems like it was a lot going on in their locker room, but man, going back to Carolina, and just going back to the really staying with the NFC South, you know. We know it's the Saints division, but you look at those other three teams underneath there. Tampa Bay, of course, they had gotten on a little streak until they got stopped by the Saints today.
Right.
Carolina, 5 in a row. Man, and they're losing to teams that they should have beaten, you know, with the exception of the Steelers, and that's where it started. That's where this losing streak started for them. The Steelers just pummeled them, and they still have not gotten over that loss. That's what it seems like to me. But they have to look over that. And poor Falcons, man. Poor Atlanta.
Yes, that injury bug.
Yeah, the injury bug is kind of caught up with them.
But their offensive line is just porous.
Yeah, exactly. They're not executing, man.
No, they need to just forget about playmakers. They need to forget about wide receivers. They need people in the middle. They need to take the best lineman on the board with their high draft pick. And if they get another draft pick, get another lineman.
Yeah. You get a left guard or a right guard, because that's been our position that we've struggled at. Even with Lavitre, but Lavitre has had issues staying healthy the last three, four seasons. So, man, it's just looked tough. Did you see the fumble? Today we were down 34-14. It's Sanu's in motion.
Uh-huh.
Max snaps it, hits Sanu's leg. And I said, man, you know,
it's the momentum. It's
and like you know where I was? I was in LaGrange on my way back, waiting on my wife to finish doing what she was doing or whatnot. And I just looked up and I told my wife, I said, they fumbled it. Come on, let's go.
Yeah, like say, like,
it's a frustrating year if you're a Falcons fan.
Yeah, I can imagine. You know, but this is the day of the any given Sunday, because we got to look at the, you know, the immortal Patriots took an L today.
Patriots normally have not done well in Miami in December.
Man,
yeah. So did you guys see how they took that L though?
Yeah,
it was in shocking fashion.
Yeah,
Tom Brady's probably sitting there like, wow.
Right.
And I don't lose.
And then Kansas City goes 2 up on them.
Yeah,
you know, with their comeback win today over Baltimore.
Yeah, so Kansas City looked like they're going to have the one seed. New England now tied with the Texans. They're both 9-4.
Mm-hmm.
So getting that second seed is going to be very interesting. As you got the Texans and the Patriots going at it, and I think the Texans might actually have the tiebreaker. Didn't they beat New England earlier this season?
No, New England beat them.
Okay.
Guys, you know, but I hear you guys on that, but the Texans do not have a better record than the Chargers.
No, the Chargers are – the big problem with the Chargers is they're in the wrong division.
Yeah, we're in second place. But we do see Kansas – we will have something to say to Kansas City before the end of the year.
Yes. But as we said last week, that's a Thursday game. It's short rest for both of you.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
That's next Thursday, right?
That's this Thursday coming up.
It's a big game. It's a big game coming up. Is that in L.A.? Is that in L.A.?
The Chargers Stadium. You know,
yeah.
Chargers.
According to this, it's at Arrowhead.
It's at Arrowhead.
Arrowhead, okay.
Let me double check that. So, But still, the Chargers, I mean, yeah, that's going to decide a lot of stuff. You know, Chargers still mathematically in to the division. Division title still mathematically involved in that.
Yeah, but unfortunately.
Yeah, it is an Arrowhead.
Yeah, unfortunately, the Chiefs do have a better home record than we do. I'm thinking myself, if we, you know.
Right.
If we beat the Chiefs, you know, how are they going to engage? Because we'll both be having three losses after if we beat them.
Right.
So I'm looking at how are they going to gauge that tie if, you know, if we both wind up 13-3.
Well, it's the divisional record. Well, that's what will get it. So if you beat the Chargers, I'm sorry, if you beat the Chiefs.
They got the tiebreaker.
Exactly. The next tiebreaker would go there.
It
goes to the conference.
They swept the division. We have two losses within the division. That's crazy.
Yeah, so you get – so now – and also we got Saturday football next week too. Texans at the Jets. We're talking about New England and Houston being tied for that second slot. Patriots are at the Steelers.
And guess what? The Steelers picked up a huge loss today.
Steelers lost to the Raiders.
Again.
The Oakland Raiders. A huge loss. And that could have resulted in the fact that they were looking ahead to Jim Nance and Tony Romo coming to call that game next week.
How else can we go off and explain that?
Yeah, right.
Right.
Right, yeah, I think they had to look ahead, and you know, it's like we always talk about. It was an underachieving effort because they didn't look at an Oakland team. These teams here that are not in the playoffs, they're looking to play spoiler now.
Absolutely.
They are the most dangerous teams. It's not your typical playoff teams. If they say, oh, you know what, this team is looking to get into the playoffs, or this team is looking to get that number two seed, and they know that they can only win a championship if they get some sort of home field advantage. We're going to ruin that.
Absolutely.
This is this time of the year.
But, you know, the Baltimore Ravens have also been brought down to earth.
Yeah.
And at this rate, we're getting a lot of attrition. All these teams that need to step up haven't, with the exception of the Chargers.
With the exception of the Chargers.
Yeah. You know, when looking at someone like the Giants, you know, people might say, okay, the Giants were supposed to do that to the Redskins, being that they have no quarterback.
Right.
Exactly. They did what Pittsburgh didn't do. Pittsburgh was supposed to put the proverbial boot to Oakland's backside.
Exactly.
And, you know, that's the difference between mental tough teams and those are not mentally tough.
Yes.
You know, you play down to your competition, you play up to your competition, and unfortunately Pittsburgh, you know, I think they have a lack of identity going on right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With losing teams like that, I mean, that's not a good indicator.
No, it's not.
Mm-hmm. No, it's not.
So, do we believe the Buccaneers are going to keep Jameis Winston, or are they kind of putting him on display?
You know what? I don't know. I don't know, man. That's kind of tough to say. Yeah, he's been saying and doing all of the right things,
right,
you know, on and off the field as of late, you know, because now I think he understands, he realized that this is a privilege. Absolutely. Playing in the National Football League, representing the Shield, is a privilege, and you have to tighten up even off field. You know, you're watched off field on everything that you do. You know, everything that you do, you're watched. And listen, he's done a great job. The team has rallied around him, you know, and they've came up. They're actually 5-8 and actually kind of sort of still alive. They're only one game behind in the win column.
That's true.
Yep.
Who is that? The Vikings, who are 6-5-1, but that's what's going to trip a lot of those other teams up behind them. They're 6-5-1. They've got that tie. That's going to kind of hurt a lot of the teams, like the Panthers, who have now fell to 6-7. The Eagles, who just fell to 6-7. The Redskins, 6-7. The Green Bay's 5-7-1. That's going to hurt them the worst. And then you got Tampa Bay, the Giants, and the Lions at 5-8. So
yeah, I'm so disgusted with the Vikings.
Really?
I'm disgusted.
They're 6th seed. They're currently sitting at the 6th right now.
Currently?
Yeah.
But will they finish at the 6th seed?
I believe it.
At the amount of money they paid Kirk Cousins, I better see some heavy bass made in the playoffs. I need to see some heavy bass.
I believe it, and here's why. I believe that the six that we see now, Rams, Saints, Bears, Cowboys, Seahawks. Well, of course, the Rams and Saints are in. They clinched their division.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So Bears, Cowboys, they're going to both clinch their divisions. And Seattle, that sleeper team that nobody sees right there, that five seed.
Right.
They could do some damage with Russell Wilson, and the defense has come along just fine. There's no one underneath the Minnesota Vikings that I can honestly say could jump the Minnesota Vikings. Carolina, I can't see them. I don't know what has happened to them, but the wheels have completely fell off of them. The Eagles are a shell of them, of their Super Bowl mystique. No. The Redskins don't have nobody out there playing. I think they're going to call us, and we're going to have to cancel the show for a little while. Green Bay is too little too late. Tampa Bay, too little too late. Giants, too little too late. Lions, Falcons, Cardinals, 49ers, please. So if I look at those teams beneath the Minnesota Vikings, they don't have a shot. And I can't look at one team beneath them that's better than them right now.
That's true. I would say the closest thing to them would be a team that just lost tonight. Would be the Eagles.
The Eagles.
Yeah. And Tampa Bay, like you said, Tampa Bay, the wheels are falling off. You know, it seems like it's not going to happen this year.
Yeah. I think we were so caught up in that Tampa Bay thing at the beginning of the year. They started, 2-0?
Right.
And they beat the Saints at the week one, and we was like, what? What's going on here? Fitz magic, and you know, we started talking about Fitzpatrick,
but I think that we made the point that you know, Fitzpatrick, it never lasts long. I'm trying to think of something. It's like curry on Indian food. You know, it just doesn't last.
Like he doesn't keep like a salad. You know,
right?
3-day-old salad, throw it away. Exactly. About 3 games or so, got to throw him away. He's a perfect number two.
Three week old ranch dressing. You know,
So
it's good for a little while, flavors things up, but eventually it goes stale. You got to get rid of this.
It does.
Speaking of Fitz, will this be the last year that we've seen Larry Fitzgerald on a football field?
No, he's in tip top shape.
Yeah. He might try to get a trade.
Right. So does he need to get traded then? You know, because he's
say that, John. You was about to say something.
I was about to say, but I think he likes Phoenix.
Yeah, me too.
That's the only thing. I think he likes
he's
the area.
He's too loyal.
Yeah, I think he likes the area.
He loves the area, and he's one of the most loyal.
Fitz, come to the Chargers and get a ring, man. Oh, my goodness, man. You have nothing else to prove down there. What are you trying to prove? He's like the little guy. You're like the little guy, those little midget trying to fight against Klitschko or something like that. What do you say? He's just a glutton for playing?
Glutton for punishment.
Glutton for punishment.
Kudos to Julio Jones. Today he became the first player in NFL history to record 1,400 receiving yards or more in 5 straight seasons.
Regardless
of the circumstances.
Right.
And regardless of the fact that he still only has, 4 or 5 touchdowns this year? I think it's 5 now because he scored 2 today. But man, that's just an amazing feat for an amazing player.
That's a lopsided stat, though.
It is. Well, I mean, when you look at it, the Atlanta Falcons should have 3 Pro Bowlers.
Right.
Matt Ryan, because Matt Ryan has had an incredible season. It doesn't seem like it, but he's had an incredible season.
And behind that line, too.
Yeah, behind that line. It just can't keep him up. It should be Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, and DeMonte Casey, who, coming into today, led the entire NFL in interceptions with 6.
Quietly.
So, and this was the same guy that replaced Keanu Neal in the starting lineup and has done a great job doing that.
But you guys got to open up the bag for him this year because there will be teams trying to poach him.
I think that he's one of the guys that's going to be hard to hold on to unless you switch him over to cornerback.
Yeah. Yeah, they gotta have a conversation with that man. Like, you know, hey, this is the blueprint we have out for next year.
Mm-hmm.
This will not happen again this year.
We're not going to win anyway. I mean, it's the Super Bowl thing, dude. They don't want nobody to host the Super Bowl down here.
Yeah, I noticed that. You know, Minnesota had a chance to do it last year, quiet as kept.
Mm-hmm.
And they choked.
Yeah, big time.
So maybe just put it in a market where there's no teams.
Like, there you go.
Like, let me think, Cleveland.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So, you know, maybe that's just the way to do it. Well, guys, little thing's going to happen in Las Vegas starting Monday. It's the winter meetings, and while a lot of stuff going on there, basically every person under the age of 25 who's ever wanted a job in Major League Baseball will be there. It's also the time at where the Hot Stove League definitely starts cranking up. And guys, should the Atlanta Braves make a move to get Bryce Harper? Because I think that is, he's the name most going to be bandied about down there among the buffet items at the Mandalay Bay.
I'm going to say no. And here's why. Because, who's that center fielder? What is it? I just had a complete brain fart. Albies? Ozzie Albies?
He was it. No, Albies no.
Who's the center fielder? I just had a complete brain fart, man.
Center fielder was yesterday. No, that's the catcher. No, the catcher's tomorrow. That's right. The pitcher's today. I'm sure we'll get that. I'm sure we'll figure that out. But
unless you want to, I mean, we don't have. I mean, Markakis is out, is in the outfield, and then Jerry Acuña is mm-hmm. out there too. So Acuña just won the National League Rookie of the Year award. So why would we even entertain Bryce Harper? Because he's a big name.
He's a big name, big bat.
Big bat. I mean, we don't have the DH hitter. Mm-hmm. You know
team
what I'm saying?
Team him up. You put Bryce Harper in the same line as Freddie Freeman, good thing it can't happen.
It can. On an offensive standpoint, you're right. It can. But will he fit? You know, I mean, like, where are you going to put him and who are you going to get rid of?
Hmm.
I'm not getting rid of Acuña.
No, you're going to keep him.
You're going to keep him. He is the absolute future of the Atlanta Braves.
Yeah, he is. So is Dansby Swanson at shortstop.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that, too.
No, Ozzie Albies plays second base.
Yeah, I thought he was an infielder.
Yeah. Is
it Ender and Chiarte?
In Chiarte. Okay. Yeah, that's who's the center fielder.
All right.
Yeah. You're not going to replace Ender and Chiarte. Because then, I mean.
So if Bryce promises. Start. If Bryce promises long-term commitment, though, do you make that sacrifice?
But you're going to have to give him long-term commitment money. Bryce Harper, the way they're looking at it, this guy might be worth between $300, $400 million. So you're going to have to back up about 10 Brinks trucks
right,
for him to stay. Because that's his market. There's really only three teams that I can see that would have a realistic shot at him. The three obvious teams, the Yankees, the Red Sox, and the Dodgers.
I'm about to say the Dodgers.
Yeah.
Yep, the Dodgers are the third.
And now let's take the Atlanta Braves out of the equation, and let's do this. Out of those three teams, the one team that could use him might be the Red Sox. But the Red Sox got Mookie Betts out there.
Right.
You're not going to do that. The Dodgers, I'm not sure who that center fielder is, but, I mean, where do you go? I mean, most of the big market teams already have their guy, unless he's willing to switch over.
Hey, I got to ask Bryce, you know, what are standards really, Bryce? What are standards?
What are you looking for?
He could come through and play for the Padres and become a legend.
You're trying to build up San Diego, folks.
San Diego, for Christ's sake.
Become a legend. Get your own statue, bro.
But he can really bring some talent over there. Yeah,
absolutely. You know, with him comes, like, you know, with him comes all other major recruits.
Right, right.
So, you know, it's kind of like the reason why Buford fired their head coach. No champion, you know, Buford is in the business of getting recruits.
I was going to talk about that during my last 60 seconds, so I'll just knock that out of the way right here. Yeah, Buford is one of those teams from Gwinnett County in Georgia that thinks they are a major college, an FCS program. They just had a streak broken where 14 straight years they've made no worse than the semifinals in this, and they take the opportunity, they don't make it, so they fire the coach, John Ford, and it's only his second year at the helm. Which doesn't make sense. And also, you go to Buford. Now, I was there Saturday, did the Blue Collar Basketball Showcase for SUV TV, and their arena. I have been in D1 arenas that are worse than this arena. It is the only high school arena I've seen with one of those jumbotrons that hang from the rafters. It's got the logo of the team underneath it. It's got, I mean, this thing has got bells and whistles. The only thing wrong with it is there's a huge, like, area on the other side of it where there's just a lot of room. And if you lose a ball out there, you got to go to Duluth to get it. But they told me that they could bring in portable seating to take that. This is a place, a high school facility that's just begging to host state champions, which is interesting because you got Infinite Energy Arena just down the street, and that has hosted state champions.
Yeah.
So Buford has, and Gwinnett County as a whole, but Buford in particular, is one of those programs, organizations that has spared no expense in making these programs and building up the resources behind them. And you gotta wonder, just what's the, I mean, as beautiful as these facilities are, just what's the point of all of this? Are you trying to, is it for your kids, give them a big experience, or is it just almost for you to give yourself an ego boost? And I think that is where we're kind of going, where it's kind of, as beautiful as that place is, mm-hmm. it's getting very close, if not cross the line, between what a high school experience should be.
You know what? And not just a beautiful arena, Leon, because I can attest to this. John and I caught a game a few years ago at their football stadium. And I'm telling you, man, I haven't seen anything like it. You know, it's one of the most beautiful football stadiums you would ever see.
Well, I'll tell you what. Buford, the view from Buford.
The view from Buford,
in terms of an actual stadium itself, mm-hmm. Cantrell Stadium at McEachern's got to be.
Oh, yeah. Yes, yeah.
But
yeah.
in terms of everything around it, Buford's
got it.
Exactly.
Buford's got it.
Although Alpharetta's got a pretty good view, too. But, okay. But, yeah, but, yes.
So
but I agree with you.
Cutting off your nose to spite your face and firing their coach.
Yeah, kind
you
of.
You can say that.
Yeah, yeah. I can understand firing your coach when you go 0-10 for 4 straight years. I can understand that, mm-hmm. but it's just not getting. It's for not making the semifinals. Honestly, yeah. I mean,
they're in 5A now, right?
5A, yes.
They're in 5A. So remember, this was the same team that was in a lower class. Just what, 5-6 years ago,
they kept demolishing everybody.
They kept demolishing everybody until they got better.
I just don't like the precedence that this is setting.
I don't either.
It's not good. I don't think it's healthy for the kids, and I think we're losing sight of what high school athletics is all about.
It's starting to become.
But still, and folks for Buford, still, if I still show up to do a game for you at your facilities, please don't kick me out. So just want to put that out there. Okay, now that that's out of the way, we can keep going.
Yeah.
Well, we are winding down, however, so since I went first, we'll go to Daniel.
All right, so my last couple of minutes, last week, guys, we had a discussion about the NFL MVP race.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And we brought up certain names, but one name that came up was Khalil Mack. And how we thought that he should be the MVP. But I want you guys to consider somebody else. And ironically, he will be on the opposite side. He won't be on the opposite side directly, but he'll be on the opposite side tonight as the Bears will take on the LA Rams. There's a guy on the defensive end that probably has a case. He's probably the best player in the National Football League. His name is Aaron Donald. Mm-hmm. And we have not mentioned this guy.
Not a household name.
Not a household name, right? Not a selfish guy. And it's not the point that he has, he's like maybe first or second in the league in sacks. That's not the point here. But the point is that he makes the plays when they need to be made. He has made championship plays this year. Even in the Kansas City game. Yeah, that Kansas City game, you can't really say that any defense, that none of the defense showed up. But Aaron Donald made some impact plays. He made some plays last week. He's made some plays this year, and I just think that he is just a simply phenomenal individual. I mean, this is a guy that has Ndamukong Suh on his line, and you can honestly say that he is humbled, and Ndamukong Suh, who used to be labeled as that dirty player, you don't hear too much of that from him now. Why? Because Aaron has grabbed him and said, this is the way we play. This is the way we do. This is the way this line do it. If you want to win a championship here just like me, then just do it this way. Aaron Donald, guys, I think is a guy that we should really shout out to. And I've been a fan of him since he was at Pitt. So this is a guy who can change plays. He can change the game. He can change the atmosphere. Do I think that the Rams are going to win tonight? No, because they're in Chicago.
Okay.
So Aaron Donald, he's probably my guy that should be in the MVP race. Not to say that Khalil Mack shouldn't be either.
All right.
Leon.
Well, mine's going to, you know, we're going to discuss this, but it didn't come up. Let's talk about Golden State Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that the Golden State Warriors will keep it together. There will be no trade coming deadline. I mean, too much success has come out of
Draymond Green.
No, absolutely not. Draymond has got to stay. He is the heart and soul of that team. That man is the emotional leader, bar none, of that championship squad. I mean, he will be going down when his story is completed in the NBA as a somewhat of a legend. He might be a Hall of Famer based on their, really just based on their success.
Mm-hmm.
So, have him and KD had certain issues? Yeah, I believe we just got the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
You know, will they, I believe as men, they will work that out. What is this to say about KD leaving next year? I don't know. You know, I don't think that he's going to go off and go to New York.
Right.
You know, I thought he would have, but, you know, I don't think so. So, you know, and it's just too much dominance. I believe the Eagles are getting in the way, but I believe that the Golden State Warriors will figure it out. Am I a Golden State Warrior fanatic? No.
No. No, you're still mad the San Diego Braves moved up the coast.
I'm a Laker fan. I believe purple and gold, you know, my whole life. And, you know, I hope that, you know, is this the wrong player that's wanting to leave? You know what I mean? Now, they're talking about getting rid of KD. You know, I might have to go media bias.
Right.
Yeah. And be like, yeah, maybe he should go. Yeah. He should go. Yeah. He's not good for NBA. I mean, he's not good for Golden State. I mean, or good for the Lakers. So, but, you know, I believe that the Golden State Warriors will go off and keep the ship together, and they will keep it rolling. Because, I mean, they still haven't brought out that nuclear weapon that is DeMarcus Cousins yet.
Yeah.
So, you know, we haven't even seen. And think about it. If you're going to trade Draymond Green before you bring out the nuclear weapon, it's not really going to make much sense. So I believe they're giving us something to talk about. So, you know, I believe that the Golden State Warriors will keep on rolling. And will they win another championship? I hope the Lakers will go off and unseat them
right
somehow. But do I believe that, in my heart of hearts, do I think that's going to happen? No.
No.
At all.
Okay. All right, well, that's going to wrap us up here for the last three guys to do a podcast. Our 13th episode, some might consider it unlucky, but I consider it very lucky because I think we had a great, great hour of conversation. Of course, Sam Crenshaw came aboard and talked about Atlanta United, his role as parade organizer for tomorrow, and I'm kind of joking about that. We also talked a little football, a little basketball, a little baseball, a little college basketball. So we talked about a little bit of everything, which is great because we are getting into that month December where a lot of things are happening, a lot of things are going on, and you're going to want to join us next week because we'll be doing the same thing, and we'll hopefully have some exciting guests for you to listen to. I want to appreciate you for tuning in to the last three guys to do a podcast. Tell a friend, tell an enemy, tell a frenemy, tell your mother, tell your father, tell that crazy uncle who watches Newsmax all the time. We appreciate all publicity we get. I'm John Borgo for
Heisman winner Kyler Murray.
That's Daniel Bolton.
Yeah, and I'm Daniel.
Leon Brown.
We want to thank you for joining us. We'll be here next week. We are the last three guys to do a podcast. You guys have a good night.